Cheers Cast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
Norm?
Yeah?
Do you find me cold?
You? Cold? No, I wouldn't say cold. Coolish, right? In the brisk area, but... Who says you're cold?
Everyone.
I don't think you're cold.
Really?
Yeah. I was meant to tell you that, but I didn't feel as though I could approach you. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheers Cast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me for the first time on Cheers Cast, we have podcasted once before talking about Spider-Man No Way Home, but the last time we chatted was in person at Rob Kelly's wedding. He is a good friend and longtime supporter of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Please welcome Corey Musa. What's up, Corey?
Hey, hi, Ryan. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, doing very well. How are you?
I am fantastic. I am sitting here with my beer and I am ready to discuss Cheers.
Fantastic. I love to hear it. This is your first time on the show, so you get the inaugural question that every new guest gets. What is your origin story with the show? How and when did you discover Cheers and what made you want to come on the podcast?
I started watching Cheers while it was in syndication. It was probably, around this time that I was like watching it live and also watching it at syndication at the same time. And it was just one of those shows that was always on in the background in my house. And then it was one of those shows that was just always on every day. So I was able to catch up on all the back episodes pretty quickly. The Rebecca years were pretty fun because that was happening more in real time for me. And this might be like the first sitcom that I got very invested in, genuinely invested in, because there was so much of it. And because it was, you know, not just in repeats, I was watching it was on live. And I don't think I had known another show at the time that had run that long. So I thought it was super exciting that the show just kept running from year to year to year to year. And then the cast also was just, you know, they were the biggest stars in the world to me when I was younger, all of them.
Cool. All right. Good to hear. All right. As we said, we're getting into the Rebecca years, and this is, I dare say this might be kind of a turning point episode for the Rebecca character in these early episodes. Cause we are on season 6, episode 6, Paint Your Office. This one is written by Peter Casey and David Lee, directed by James Burrows. The original air date was Thursday, November 5th, 1987. When Norm comes in for a beer, he and the rest of the bar are shocked to discover that Rebecca has cut him off for stretching his tab way beyond his limit. Frasier and Sam try to get her to take pity on him, and Sam suggests that Norm could work off his debt. Norm offers to paint her office. While alone with Rebecca in the office that night, her tough facade crumbles after she gets chewed out on the phone by her boss, Evan Drake. Norm offers a friendly shoulder for her to cry on and commiserates with her. While they acknowledge that each of them finds the other pleasant, it would be too awkward to admit that publicly. The next day, Rebecca gives Norm a beer on the house. Sam wants to know why she's so chummy with Norm, and Norm reveals that they shared a nice moment when she opened up to him. Hoping to share a similar moment, and naturally exploit it for sex, Sam tags along with Norm when he goes to paint Rebecca's apartment. When Norm leaves, Sam and Rebecca reveal aspects of their family history, the commonality being that both have lived in the shadow of more successful siblings. When Rebecca admits that she's glad she got to know Sam better, he goes on the offensive, revealing the suit and tie hidden beneath his painter's coveralls and a bottle of champagne on ice in one of the paint buckets. Somehow unseduced, Rebecca kicks him out of her apartment. All right, Corey, big picture, what did you think of this episode?
I loved it. I loved watching this episode again. I remember this episode pretty well for some reason. It was probably just one of those episodes that was on all the time. I mean, they were all on all the time. This episode is just a wonderful performance from Kirstie Alley. She's she's on fire. She gets to do a whole range of emotions that are really, really cool. And you get to see that Rebecca has so many different sides to her, and to see the cast interact with each other and to see the shenanigans. I think that Sam is coming off particularly like creepy in this episode. He's like, you know, and watching this through a more modern lens, and I know you've talked about this on the show before, it's just like, I don't know if Sam was painted to be the hero of the show, but everything he does is so kind of wrong and obnoxious, and he has no shame about it.
His womanizing, was a product of a time. He was a type of character that was very much of a particular era for male-driven characters in pop culture, for the sort of masculine jock culture. I mean, the character is a former athlete. He's in recovery. And just so much about this character is built not only on his sex appeal and his ability to get women, but his sort of need to conquer these challenges when it comes to having sex with everybody as a way of thwarting his own natural insecurities about feeling useless, feeling washed up as an athlete, as a drunk, and just kind of getting older. And we see it more and more as the show goes on. And it was one thing when during the Diane years, because even though he was her boss and the relationship was frequently inappropriate for a number of reasons, there was this genuine love that you knew that the characters had, and this understanding that they kind of belonged together. So even though it was toxic at times and not healthy from a employer-employee standpoint, you kind of let that stuff go. Now we're on a different footing where he is not the boss. Rebecca is his superior. And the way he behaves, for one thing, he's dependent on her. And the way he behaves is completely inappropriate. And like, yeah, episodes like this where it's like, this isn't even borderline. No, dude, this is just so, so wrong by any modern standard.
It's like toxic masculinity. And he is so bold.
Yeah,
it's like he cares more about his satisfying his ego than he really is like being mindful of his well-being, like in terms of like his career safety and everything else. It's like, you don't know this person yet. And so, yeah, when he was doing it with Diane, it really was different. And anytime he was doing it with flirting with another girl, a lot of the time it was to just get Diane riled up. So in this context, we have no Diane now. Sam barely knows this person and she barely knows him. And I don't even understand why she continues to tolerate him because, and if Sam's own toxic masculinity didn't get in his way, he would totally always get the girl in the end. If he just was the nice version of himself, it would be so easy, but he can't resist.
It's telling that when they actually have their kind of moment and then she goes back to change, like he's like, honesty, who would ever thought? That line of dialogue like says so much. Like, yeah, like this is an episode where you're like, okay, it's hard to like Sam. And I think what saves him in the eyes of the viewer, and obviously somebody who has to podcast about him every week for years and years, is the now 5.5 years of history that we have with the character, that we know he is on the side of the angels and he is a good person. So if he does something crappy like this, we know, but Sam is good. He's one of the good ones at heart, isn't he?
Right.
And also the fact that he doesn't win. His buffoonishness and like this kind of behavior won't be rewarded, at least not in this episode.
So. Well, Rebecca's great with him because she really doesn't take any of it. She never does. And I don't know. That's what's so funny about it. She is so strict and stern, and she's got that Savick quality to her at the very beginning. And then she starts to brighten up and lighten up. And in this episode, you know, we get all of these, as I was saying, these degrees of like what the character goes through. And when she finally does open up and share something to him, and it's like, just shut up now, Sam. It's like, you did really good. Just end it there. And it's like she goes to change, and that's like the defining moment, like where it's like he could just have sat there. Could have just sat there, and maybe they would have made a date with each other as she was going on her way out to go to the gym or something. But instead, he does like the most ridiculous thing.
And... yeah, it turns on the music. I remembered that. Yeah, he was wearing a suit and tie underneath his coveralls, but I forgot.
So
I forgot the champagne on ice hidden in one of the paint buckets that he brought in with Norm. So, and actually, well, that's the other thing. Like, again, this is more of an indictment against him, but when this episode begins, you think it's going to be a Norm-centric episode, and Sam literally hijacks it and takes it away from him halfway through the show.
He really does, and you're really getting to see something. It's like, this is the Rebecca Norm episode. This is the episode where they're going to get to know each other and bond, and Norm is actually, like, seemingly one of the first people then that Rebecca becomes friends with at that bar, and she does not feel threatened by Norm. She finds him non-threatening. She knows he has a wife, and he really doesn't seem interested in anything other than, like, drinking beer and... you know, so she takes to liking him, and then you're so right, and then Sam literally, like, I mean, it's like what his character is doing inside of the episode, and it's like what he's doing outside of the episode. He's like hijacking the episode.
Yeah, he's just latching on to Norm, and like he's like take me along, and then get out of there so I can just like.
And then
so
Norm is gone, and he doesn't come back, and that's that. Yeah. Like Norm has a problem; his house gets flooded in the basement. He has to go, and that's the end of Norm's storyline for the episode.
Yeah, I think you pointed out, and I think it's classic, and it's sort of endemic of the character that. Norm is one of the first people that she really warms up to on a cordial, friendly basis, because that's Norm. Like, Norm is the guy that when he walks in the bar, the whole room lights up and acknowledges him. Like, to be the barfly, to be in every single episode, 275 or something episodes, as just the guy who sits at the corner and everything, and who's never going to win, but never really going to lose very much, and is just the rock, just the steady corner of that bar, of that sort of gravity well. Yeah, it's nice you're a nice person. Yeah.
That's what Norm hasn't had the chance yet. So we've spent the last six seasons with Norm and the rest of the cast. And like, they all know who we as the audience know who he is. Rebecca doesn't know who he is yet.
Right.
He just needs to spend literally like half a day with her, working with her. And that bar tab is gone. That'll be the last time that's addressed. And now you understand. Can we talk about Norm's bar tab in this? Because they mention a number.
We do. Actually, let's go through the episode. Let's start with the teaser. We get like this short little thing where Carla is walking through. Carla is still very pregnant in this episode, and we get this tiny little scene of Frasier, Cliff, and Sam are kind of in awe at her pregnancy, and Frasier kind of mentions being, you know, jealous that she can carry a life inside of her, and it enhances her beauty and her inner radiance, and they just kind of going on out with like the flowery language of the miracle of life, and they even like kind of like this mentions that, like, you know, men are condemned to suffer the role of spectators or something now, that like we can never know how it really feels to be, you know, a pregnant woman. Cut to Carla walking by going, oh, it feels like there's a dump truck parked on my bladder. And then of course the guys just all look at each other, and they're just like, on the other hand, nature is wise in its way. It's like, yeah, you don't really want to go through what women go through. So nice short little sweet teaser.
Classic.
So then when we come back from the opening credits, Rebecca comes in. She has found Sam's jasmine scented oriental massage oil wedged between the couch cushions in her office. Sam, again, he's like, why don't you put that back where you found it? And that way we'll know where it is when we need it. Totally inappropriate, but I really actually liked that line. I thought that was funny the way he said it.
Really sleazy. Again, just met your boss like pretty recently, and your stuff is still at her office, and you're basically letting her know right there, hey, just so you know, I've done it on that couch in there more than once. Like,
And she says, she throws it back at him. She's like, when hell freezes over. And he's like, that's perfect because this oil heats up when you rub it in. and then, yeah, of course, we get Norm's entrance. And it's one of his classic lines that I've always remembered. That's what he asks, what's going on, Mr. Peterson? And he says, let's talk about what's going in, Mr. Peterson. they talk about the job hunt, and he got turned down for another job, and he's got a beer right in front of him, and Rebecca slaps her hand down on top of it before he can take a drink, and he's like almost like a rabid animal. He's like, that's a good way to lose that hand.
Yeah, that's a funny moment. He says it's so deadpan to her, and he's just like in shock. It's like genuine. He's like, what are you doing? Do you want me to bite your hand off? I don't understand.
because she says he's cut off, and
that couldn't even have occurred to him, you know, that like that's what she was gonna do, and then it's like his worst nightmare then.
Yeah, because he's looking around for the candid camera set or something like that. He's like, what's going on? And she says she was going over the books, and he is way over his credit limit. And Sam's like, what is he over, $10 or $20? And Rebecca says, $837.
$837 or like, that's a lot of beer. That's just a lot of beer.
So this is where we ended. So you haven't heard it yet, 'cause I haven't released it yet, but as of the last episode before this, on every episode of Cheers Cast, I keep a tally of how many beers Norm drinks, whether we see him drinking them or ordering them, whether he's paying for them or getting them on the house, whatever it is, like how many beers Norm gets in front of his face or how many he takes credit for. As of the last episode, he was at 499. So this beer would have been his 500th beer, but Rebecca denies it.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Like, they can't have done the math. Do you think they could have done the math and known that when making the episode? That's like a
I don't think so. I think that's my own private sickness. I just think it's very weird, but yes. So
that's like great timing. Well, you know what's interesting about that too, that if he owes $857 and if you put those beers at like, I don't know, $2 a piece or something, it's close.
It's not far off. His debt is basically a little bit less than double, you know, how many he's drunk. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it actually like is good math. 500 beers. Wow. This is like a mile. Well, he does get the 500 beer.
Yes, later on this episode, because she gives him the one, even though she says
he
it's
asked
on the house.
Coffee. He asked for coffee, and Rebecca like comes out, and she's like, "Give him a beer."
On the house, yeah. But yeah, so when she's initially cut him off, you know, Sam says they can't cut off a regular. Frasier like tells her like Norm is in this delicate spot. I'm assuming because he mentioned that he was turned down for another job. She's like, you know, this is a big hit to his self-esteem. He needs our comfort and our support. And Rebecca's like, well, you want to cover his tab? And he's like, no, I don't. As he says, he's like, Norm, the woman won't listen to reason or something like that.
Oh, classic Kelsey grammar.
Yeah. And Sam's like, well, maybe Norm can work off his debt. And you get Norm and Cliff both kind of like snickering and laughing at the idea. And Rebecca says, you know, are you good at anything? Carla's like, yeah, but you cut him off.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, maybe he can do some accounting. Of course, she's part of this huge corporation, this Lillian Corporation that they mention. And she's like, no, he can't be our accountant. Our books are handled. Then she mentions this group, Franklin, Sussman, and Gorwitz. And Norm's like, oh, they're good. They canned me a couple of years ago.
Nonstop zingers there.
Yeah. So then Norm mentions that he used to paint, and he offers to paint her office. And we get this weird exchange where Cliff is taken aback by the idea, and he thinks that painting is beneath Norm's dignity and like beneath like their like social status or whatever. He thinks
it's so awkward because Cliff is like a working class, like blue collar kind of worker, and Norm is actually not as like actually a sit at his desk accountant kind of person. Yeah, no, I mean, it's actually just, he's just projecting.
And it's weird. And Frasier kind of like picks up on it because there's some weird hostility here. He's like, do you want to talk about this? And Cliff is like, well, you know, we'll be on different social strata. We'll have nothing to talk about. Norm thinks that's a great idea. He's like, I can paint anytime. And they kind of end it there, but teasing ahead, there's an episode later on this season that becomes an issue again, like a feud between Norm and Cliff over like their jobs, like painting and postal working, and which one is more difficult or which one is more like kind of menial labor. It's this weird little thing that I don't really think works. Like, it's a weird thing to kind of jump on for Cliff, and I just don't think it's as funny or as interesting as they maybe wanted it to be.
Well, you know, they were really trying to like continue to build these characters who were never meant for this giant long form arc. They were just side characters at one point that were there for a couple of zingers, and they just became these huge pieces of the puzzle. They were never like Chekhov and Sulu. They
that night after, as the bar is closing up and everything, Woody mentions how he's jealous that Carla gets to go home to this nice big family. And I wrote down her whole thing because she got this mini monologue. Carla says, I've got 11 people living under a roof that was meant for only 6. Gino's dog just had puppies on my side of the bed. My daughter-in-law is driving me nuts. And somehow my mother-in-law got a hold of our address. And from all of that, the one thing that Woody picked up on was puppies? Oh, you're so lucky. So we get to then we have like the big scene, like our scene with Norm and Rebecca in the office, and Norm is humming as he paints, and she comes in, she's like, you're having a good time, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And she gets this, she's like, no. And then he says she got a message from her boss, and instantly her demeanor changes. She starts like combing her hair, kind of like doing this like sexy vamp look for her vanity mirror.
Yeah, it's very like 80s with this, like try to make her hair as big as possible. It's so silly. It's very funny.
So she gets a call from her boss, and then there's this whole like miscommunication thing where she's trying to signal Norm to get out, but she's talking to her boss and he's like, what are you calling me? Are you calling me Norm? And there's that whole thing. She finally just screams for Norm to leave. So Norm goes out to talk to Woody for a few minutes as Woody is cleaning up and just dumping some extra beers down the drain. And you just see like Norm is like sweating and he's like licking his lips. And Woody's like, I usually don't even drink beer, but I cleaned the taps. And I had to make sure that they were good. And I had one and it was like a mountain stream. So cold and fresh. And it just...
This is actually like a particularly like wonderful performance by Woody Harrelson. It's just like this simple little monologue, and you're trying to actually figure out, because his performance is a little suspect, where you're like, is he that naive or is he fucking with Norm right now? Like, no, you're not 100% sure. Like, I want to believe that it's just sweet little Woody, but there's like a wickedness I see in Woody Harrelson in this episode.
That is the eternal question, is how much of the savant is in the idiot savant of him.
Yes.
So, and Norm just being going crazy with the tantalization, he retreats back into the office. And this is where Rebecca throws her arms around him and starts crying. And he's like, is there something wrong? And she's just unintelligibly muttering. And you talked about all of the shades of Rebecca that we see. Like, now, 5 previous episodes now, we have gotten Rebecca the hard-ass boss. And she's been cold. She has occasionally been sympathetic to Sam's plight or what's going on, and kind of like leaning. She has very subtly kind of let her guard down when they talked about her boss and how obviously she's attracted to him and she perhaps prone to make a fool of herself in front of her boss. But we really haven't gotten a good look at that yet. It's mostly been one note of the frosty Rebecca Howe. And now this episode, we see her kind of losing it a little bit when she's talking to Norm or when she's screaming for Norm. And then now she's crying and she's just like muttering and she can't even like hear. And it's just like these new shades that we see of her. Like this is the episode where it's like, we find out that she's a human being and all of these different shades. And it's just like for Kirstie Alley, it's just like such a great job. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she gets to do so much in this episode. She gets to have so much fun, and she gets to go from, like, you know, 1 to 10 and then back down to 1. It's really cool.
There's a classic moment, and I'm tipping what will probably be my favorite part of the episode, but it's one of those that I always remember this because it was in the 200th episode of Cheers was their, like, just like their clip show special when they went through all of the highlights. And there's the one when she's sitting in their chair and she's like, Norm, I need your help. And he's like, thinks that she needs to just be encouraged and bucked up. You're going to be fine. You just stare. Things are going to turn around. She's like, no, you idiot. My hair is stuck to the wall.
Oh, yeah. It's just classic.
So he fixes the hair. He tries to get out. And she asks him to stay and keep painting. And she doesn't want to talk about what happened, which is a relief to him. And then she remarks that painting seems to make him happy. And he's like, yeah. And he kind of tells her this story that the color that he's painting reminds him of this girl, Mary Lou Sebolt. And he had a crush on her in third grade. And she didn't know he existed, similar to what's going on with her and with Rebecca and her boss, it seems. And he would write these anonymous notes saying that he loved her. Finally, one day he signed it with his initials NP, but the next day Mary Lou started dating his friend Nikki Petropoulos. And Rebecca's like, well, what did you do? And Norm's like, the only thing I could do, I found Nikki and I sat on him. And Rebecca laughs just like that. She's just kind of like, she's like, that was a good one. And she kind of laughs. And she says that later, she's like, I think that's the first time I've really laughed since I took over here. And Norm goes, oh, it is. Trust me.
Right. Yeah.
Again, they're acknowledging another side of her that it's not only have we seen her cry, but this is the first time she's laughed in the episode like a human being. And they kind of end the scene when she's like, yeah, I guess we kind of like each other, but this will just be our little secret. And Norm's like, yes, please. So the next day, that's when Rebecca lets Norm have a beer on the house. He orders a coffee and she's like, have a beer on the house. So this is, in fact, I'll make a sound effect. This is Norm's 500th beer in the show.
Oh my God, it's incredible. Incredible right here, right? And it's like he earned it. He earned his 500th beer.
That's, he did.
And he clears. This is like a moment where his tab gets cleared. So
yeah.
This is a good, this should be a great feeling for Norm.
And Sam, of course, this is where Sam really starts to just intrude on the show and kind of take over. He wants to know why Norm and Rebecca are so chummy, and Norm says that it's the secret. And he's like, guys are supposed to talk about girls. And he's like, didn't I tell you everything about me and Diane? And Norm's like, no. He's like, well, this is your chance to thank me. So, but Norm was like, yeah, we just had this touching moment. She needed a shoulder to cry on and just someone to show some compassion. And Sam hears the word compassion. And when she comes out saying that they're running low on seltzer, he just, like, he becomes so overly dramatic in his apologies and regret over the lack of seltzer. He's like, I'm so sorry. I wish there was something I could do. And she's like, well, order more next time. He's like, but if only that was enough, I just don't know if I can ever. And she's trying to draw this compassion out. She's like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, that's what's great about her pattern with him. She, like, it's like Diane would fall into that with Sam all the time. Sam would say something like that and Diane would take him seriously. Rebecca's just like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? Like, what? Yeah. Why are you acting this way?
Yeah.
It's really funny. And yeah, Ted Danson's performance in that scene, again, it's like, great. What he's doing there is really great. He's being super sincere. It's really funny.
She mentions that Norm is going to paint her apartment. Sam begs Norm to help get, Norm is like, I want no part of this. You're just going to hit her. And he's like, no, I just want to see if there's a human being that I have to work with like this. And Norm compromises and lets him come along. And then when Sam comes into the apartment, she's like, oh, great. Now it knows where I live.
She calls him it.
Yeah. So Norm tries to get Sam to sand the part of the woods, and Sam doesn't want to do that. So he tries to get him to tape, like, around the windows, and Sam doesn't want to do that either. So just after this little time, Norm is doing all the work, and Sam is just sitting on the couch reading a magazine. And that's when Rebecca comes out. She's like, Carla called. Vera says there's 2 feet of water in the basement, and Norm's like, oh, that's a foot more than usual. So. Yeah, then Norm has to leave, and he's gone for the rest of the episode. And
that's it.
Now
it's like predatory Sam
Yeah.
alone with Rebecca.
But I forgot, is not only is this like Rebecca, like we're seeing all these new facets of her, we get her apartment, like we have a new set, like this isn't a season where they're really using their budget to give us a lot of like new secondary locations outside of the bar.
Oh, like, that's interesting.
We didn't see Diane's apartment until the second season, and even still, like, we only went there a couple times in all the episodes that she was on the show, and we're gonna be in Rebecca's apartment a couple times. So
yeah, you would think it would help to establish like the personality of the character, so it's great. But in this instance, the apartment almost has no personality because it's being prepped for painting. Mm-hmm. But whatever, the book in Rebecca's hand is what gives her all the personality she needs.
Right.
Yeah. Which is the strangest thing. She has a cop. She's walking around with a copy of Armand Hammer's biography, which is so random. I mean, it's not random. It's because he's like a developer or something, right? Oh, and like, so she's probably reading what she thinks that like Evan.
In later seasons, I mean, like that's she'll name drop people like Jack Welch and Donald Trump,
Right.
She'll mention those in the 80s, yeah. But yeah, once they're alone, Sam, again, just not knowing what he's doing, just starts pretending like he's getting emotional, thinking about Norm losing all of his cherished memories and photos. And she's like, she's like, what are you doing? And then, yeah, he admits that he came over on his day off, or she basically forces him to admit that he came over on his day off to paint her apartment just in the hopes of getting to know her better and seeing the softer side of her. And
which is true at the end of the day.
Which is true, like, yeah. And she's like, okay, fine. She's a little bit touched by that, by like the lengths he's willing to go. And then we play like the 50 questions, and he gets to know. He's like, where was she born? She mentions San Diego. She says her father is a captain in the Navy. That will come back in a much later episode. She says,
yeah, we get her whole backstory right here. Yeah. We learn about this massive family that Rebecca has and like why she feels the way she feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause she goes through her family. The father is a Navy captain, mother interior designer. She's got one brother who's a doctor, another brother who's an attorney. And she says her sister is Miss San Diego. The sister will also come back in a later episode.
So this description she gives, does this continue throughout the series to line up with like what she says in this moment?
Her father will appear in a later episode as he is a Navy man. I don't know his exact rank. He might be more than a captain. And her sister will show up played by, God, I can't think of the actress's name now. She was in Desperate Housewives and Melrose Place. I cannot think of the actress's name, but yeah, we'll get to her. When the sister comes in later, she's an actress, like a B movie actress, but it's definitely like presumed that she could have been Miss San Diego. She could have been like and also done this acting thing. So those do line up, that bit of her, this history that she's getting right now, the continuity will bear that out. And then she says that the best thing she ever did was run away to San Francisco to hang out with Grace Slick. And then we have Sam relate to her and talks about his own family. And this is something that doesn't come up very often because he mentions his brother. And he says the international lawyer, smart, funny, handsome, speaks four languages, plays the piano, flies his own jet. And Sam's brother was a big part of the end of season one, but was hardly ever mentioned after that. And like because so early on in the season, I don't think they either didn't care about the continuity because they didn't think they were going to last very long, or they were just very fast and loose with it. Like mentioning that Sam had an ex-wife in the second episode. And I think that's only referenced one other time. And then his brother is like this big subplot of the season one finale. And then I don't think hardly
his
ever
brother in the season one finale represented the way that Sam is talking about him right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. This is exactly how he was. And it's like, because it's a threat that Diane is falling in love with his brother.
Oh, well that what's really hit him hard then when Rebecca makes a jab. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Because Rebecca is like, well, does your brother ever come into the bar? He sounds a lot better than you. And Sam comes back. He's like, I'll happily invite him over if you invite Miss San Diego.
Well,
and
you then, know.
Yeah. And she goes, well, they probably leave together. Yeah. knowing that.
And so. then they're like, "Ha ha, we're buddies." And if Sam just left it at that,
exactly,
if Sam just left this moment and let it be this sweet moment where they got to be real with each other. But nope, not Sam. What does he do next, Ryan?
Well, that's when she goes in. She's like, I'm glad we had this moment. I've got to go in and change. Which...
She's messing with him on purpose.
Well, yeah, but did he really think it was that easy? Did he really... What did he think she was going to change into? Like, all it took was just talking about their siblings and she was like... Because, yeah, she comes out and she's dressed like she's going to the gym. She's got, like, a bag and everything. And he's wearing a jacket and tie and he's got music playing on her radio and a champagne bottle. And she's like, what the hell is wrong with you? Again, she's pissed that he manipulated their tender moment they had to try and seduce her. And she told him all that stuff. There's a line here. I told you all that stuff about my sister and my brothers and me being the fattest kid in school. And he's like, you didn't tell me that. And she goes, well, I wasn't. And it's a funny line, but the audience doesn't really react to it. And I'm not sure the dialogue is moving too fast that they didn't hear, because the audience gives almost no reaction to it. But I thought it was funny.
That's a particularly funny line.
And also knowing what becomes of Rebecca or Kirstie Alley in the years after the show, a little bit interesting. Yeah. No. So then Sam says he's offended and that she's so disgusted by his attraction to her. And he's like, I wouldn't make love to you if you asked me. If you begged me, I wouldn't make love to you. Go ahead, just ask. And she's like, fine, would you make love to me? He's like, okay, but just this once. And she slams the door on his face and that's it.
That exchange is brilliant too. Kirstie Alley's delivery is really, really great. She just like looks at him and she's like, would you make love to me? And his reaction and his timing is perfect. He's like right on top of her. And he's just like, well, okay, but just
once. He's like, okay, you twisted my arm, but yeah. Fine.
He doesn't miss a beat. So it's well done. So it's like really funny to me that Sam, you know, strips to that suit and does all of those shenanigans. And I'm like, does this work on other people? It must make Rebecca feel so bad in terms of like, what do you think I am? Like, yeah. Do you think I have the intelligence of like a 4-year-old child? Why would you treat me like this and talk to me in this way? And it's like, does this actually work for you with anybody? And I guess that's Sam, because it's like, yes, it does. And Rebecca is whatever, you know, the ultimate challenge for him, his male conquest crap. I know Ted Danson had problems with the misogyny in Sam Malone, but
yeah. They soften it and they actually explore interesting avenues of it in later seasons. And I kind of wonder like how much sort of the curse of Sam, and I wonder how much of it was if it was there before Diane or if it was the result of Diane. But like to your question, like, does this work on other women? Yeah, this kind of stunts that he's pulling here works on a lot of the women that he dates and he tries to sleep with, but those aren't the women that he's really interested in. Throughout the series, we see he wants a smarter woman. He wants a challenge. And I think because Sam is smart enough that he knows he's not just satisfied. He wants somebody who's going to put him in his place and challenge him as a person, as a man, as a character, and somebody like Rebecca. And we'll see other characters, even if they're only in one episode at a time going forward. You know, he does have this thing for brainy women that, you know, pushes buttons in a little bit different way. And he does respond to it differently. And I think he's just, yeah, that's one of the reasons why he doesn't sell that, because he's not satisfied by the women who fall for this type of thing. Yeah.
He's testing. Sam is pushing. He's pushing the boundaries on purpose to see what the limits are with her, who she is. That's what he's really doing. He's scoping out the long game.
Yeah.
Cool.
Again, his behavior totally so wrong, but we forgive Sam because we love him. We know he's a good guy. And just because in the end, he's the one who looks foolish. Like, this does not make Rebecca look the weaker or suffer anything for his nonsense.
Oh no, she wins. You know, she is his foil.
Interestingly, for a little note for this episode, there are no guest actors or anybody with speaking lines other than the main character cast, except for the crowd that shouts out Norm when Norm walks in. But no other like bar patrons or guest characters have any speaking lines or dialogue in this one.
Nope, just a core cast kind of episode.
Yeah. Which is good because we spent a lot of time revealing new aspects of characters. So yeah, getting into the like superlatives, like I said, for Norm's tab, he only had one beer in this episode, but it was the biggie. That takes him up to 500 beers for the series. Yeah.
No, and yeah. He paints, and it's like he's got to paint those that office sober, you know.
Yeah,
like that's got to be something for Norm. In reality, he'd be sweating a little there. He'd really be needing that beer.
Maybe instead when he started, he was just so nervous around Rebecca that helped him stay upright. But yeah. Employee of the week. I mean, part of me wanted to give it to Norm just because he's so lovable and he's so funny in that scene in the office. But this was just Rebecca's episode to shine. Like, as you pointed out, we learn so much more about her. I mean, from a character standpoint and what she reveals through her dialogue, but just also in Kirstie Alley's performances, seeing her laugh for the first time, seeing her cry for the first time, seeing her emotional and vulnerable, seeing a side of her that is not Savick. As you said, she's not playing Savick this episode. And it's a relief. So yeah,
She genuinely gets MVP. I mean, she has to. It's like she had such big shoes to fill when she was brought in to this show. And when you think about it, what the show was, it's like she's the only female actress on like the, you know, this sausage party show. They didn't add more women to the main cast ever. Like it was, I mean, and Rhea Perlman, of course.
But Carla is one of the boys. Like,
but Carla is one of the boys. despite
her constant fertility and seemingly endless, like parade of like always like conceiving and having children. Carla is really one of the boys. Lilith will become a regular for like later episodes, but even Lilith is.
They do give Lilith a credit in the opening, don't they? Eventually,
yeah, she becomes a regular for like the 10th season. Yeah,
did you see the news of late that the the newly planned Frasier revival is supposed to be set in Boston?
I saw that. Yeah.
So we might actually go back to Cheers legitimate. I mean, I'm sure we're going to go back to Cheers.
I mean, I can't think of another reason why to set it in Boston if you're not going to do something like that.
Great. Yeah.
I'm just,
you're so scared.
I'm nervous about that. I when we get these reunion type of things or trying to revisit the same old past glory and it's now decades removed, I worry that it's not going to have the same feel or it could possibly tarnish something. I get nervous about these type of things.
It'll be completely different. If you trust in the fact that Frasier itself had nothing to really do with, it's like it was its own show from.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and I think Frasier succeeded in large part that way.
And I'm sure whatever this will be its own version also, because it's not going to be Frasier. I mean, you know, and it's not going to be Cheers. It's not Cheers or Frasier. It can't be either of those things. But you can have the character of Frasier still centering the whole thing. And what an amazing journey for Kelsey Grammer. It just makes no sense to me. Somebody can play the same character for so long.
For real. Gosh, yeah. Well, I mean, just as we're recording this, Richard Belzer just passed away yesterday or the day before.
I was just going to mention this. I think I was really sad to hear it, but he also played Munch for like similar amount of time as Kelsey Grammer playing Frasier, right?
Right. And across so many different shows, like just across, little cameos where he would appear as that character. But yeah, no, I because I was a fan of Homicide from the beginning when he started the character, and then just to see the evolution and to carry that through all those years. Yeah.
That's so crazy. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He was terrific. Terrific actor. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm nervous. about the planned reboot just because these reunion type of things make me nervous, but I trust in the creative forces behind it. Kelsey Grammer, obviously phenomenal talent, and we'll see. We'll see. So for the home run or for the funniest gag in the episode, I think I already mentioned it, but it's that moment where Rebecca, she has her hair stuck to the painted wall and she's like, I need your help. And Norma's trying to buck her up with encouragement and you're just her whining. No, you idiot. My hair is stuck to the wall.
I think my laugh out loud moment was without a doubt. And I saw that this was after I had watched the episode. I saw that this was like memorable quotes on the IMDb page. And I was like, of course it was. So it's the exchange with Norm and Rebecca as he's getting ready to leave. And she's like, Norm. He's like, yeah. And she's like, do you find me cold? And he's like, you cold? I wouldn't say cold, coldish. All right. In the brisk area, but why? Who says you're cold? And she's like, everyone. And he's like, I don't think you're cold. And she's like, really? And he's like, yeah, I always meant to tell you that, but I didn't feel as though I could approach you. And he says it's so her like, when he says, I don't think you're cold, and she says, really? It's like extremely sincere. And then his response back to her is even more sincere when he's like, yeah, I always meant to tell you, but I didn't feel like I could approach you. So I thought that was a particularly funny exchange. I laughed out loud. Yeah. I knew it was funny. But close second would be what we had talked about earlier with Sam, the final like button on the scene with Sam leaving and being like, would you... and her being like, would you make love to me? And him being like, well, okay, just but once. Just once.
Awesome. All right, well, Corey, thank you very much for coming on the show and talking about this episode. This was a ton of fun. Like I said, your first time on Cheerscast, but you are no stranger to the Fire and Water Network. Other episodes, the things that you want to mention, project that you've done, like with our mutual friend Rob.
If you ever want to hear me ramble on, check me out on the Film and Water podcast and on Rob Kelly's other podcasts like Fade Out. Or you can hear me talk about my Joy of Firestorm with Shag.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Thanks again for being on this episode. And thanks to all of you out there who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. This show is patronized by the Right On Podcast Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. I know I used the word patronized wrong that way. That's a joke for Cheers. Go to patreon.com/FW podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening. And until next time, we're closed.
My father's a captain in the Navy. My mother's an interior designer. My brother's a surgeon. My other brother's an attorney. My sister was Miss San Diego. The only really happy moment of my life is when I ran away to San Francisco and hung out with Grace Slick. Do you want to know the lyrics to White Rabbit, or can I quit now?
Boy, it sounds like some of the kids in your family are pretty successful, huh?
Yeah, well, if you measure success in terms of wealth, happiness, and my father's undying devotion, maybe.
Yeah, boy, I know. I got a brother like that. International lawyer. Handsome, smart, funny. The guy plays the piano, he speaks four languages, flies his own jet. Seems like my whole life I've been trying to get out from under his shadow.
I know just what you mean. Does he ever come in the bar?
No, but I'll call him if you'll call Miss San Diego.
Yeah, they'd probably end up leaving together.